Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
And you're very welcome along to Monday Night Rugby, the first Monday Night Rugby post Rugby World Cup 2019. South Africa emerging victorious on Saturday morning in Yokohama with a 32 points to 12 victory over England. Joined on the line to look back on that victory now, I'm delighted to say, by former Leinster coach Matty Williams. Matty, you're very welcome back to the show.
Everything good to talk to you, Matt.
And you. I was going to say the manner of the victory, but the size of the victory for South Africa surprised you on Saturday?
I thought South Africa had a very good shot at it, and I said so before the game, but I have to say I didn't predict how poor England would be. The win in the end, as we all know, was pretty emphatic. The two tries were quite magnificent, but England were never in the game. Their set play fell apart. That's the part I certainly didn't expect. I thought it'd be a real battle in South Africa to show, but one point there, the English scrum, line out, and restart had all been lost in a row, and it was quite stunning there the way that they the pressure got to them.
Is it a pressure of the occasion, or is it a pressure inflicted by the Springboks?
I think it's a bit of both. I think Eddie Jones, the week leading up to the New Zealand fixture, was quite brilliant in placing all the pressure on New Zealand. He kept saying there's no pressure on us. His actual great quote was, pressure's going to get up off its seat and chase the New Zealanders down the road. It was quite a funny quote, because Eddie was always having a bit of a laugh. But I thought that obviously came around to bite them on the bum, because all of a sudden they were under real pressure. Everyone expected them to win. They'd just beaten the holders of the World Cup. It looked like they were really feeling it. And the first 10 minutes, the injury to Sinclair and the way the first salvos of that game went, you could see the look of almost fear, and I don't mean they were fearful of physical contact or anything, but they looked really, really under pressure. They looked fearful of the day, that they were fearing losing rather than coming out, and as Rassie Erasmus says, the pressure should be enjoyable because it's an opportunity. They certainly didn't seem to be saying that with their body language, and certainly their performance didn't say that either.
Yeah, is there a sense that they peaked with the All Blacks game a week prior?
Yeah, look, it's
kind of hard to match that emotional and preparational peak, I guess, 2 weeks in a row.
It is, and the World Cup has a great history of throwing up magnificent semi-finals, and the team that wins those incredible semi-finals usually the next week doesn't perform. Australia probably bucked that trend in 91. When they beat New Zealand at Lansdowne Road, and then they won the next week. But I think everyone in the Northern Hemisphere would say that England lost that final rather than Australia won it. So there's a long history in the World Cup of that type of thing. France against New Zealand and Australia in 87, and then again in 99, played magnificent rugby in a semi-final and just couldn't match it the next week. And England did that as well. And the emotion that the English played with against New Zealand, and the way that it was greeted, as it always is by the English media and their society, is overwhelming praise that tends to filter into their teams. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen this over the years. You know, the English media, when they think their team can win, just lay it on that thick. And then, of course, when they lose, they absolutely punch the hell out of them, and they're on the way down, as only the English media can. But I think it was a storm that was coming. And I also believe that everyone really underestimated South Africa. I was quite shocked at how everyone just thought South Africa were going to fall over. I certainly didn't feel that. But again, I didn't think they'd win in the style that they did.
It seemed to be a side and a setup from a Springbok point of view that was actually tailor-made in retrospect. It's easy to look at it now, but it was tailor-made to front up and take on England, and the way they play the game was a way, if, especially when you look at the way that it's not necessarily front-loaded, the Springboks team. Rassie Erasmus has made a point consistently throughout the tournament, specifically in the knockout games, of having that 6-2 formation essentially on the bench, whereby it's mostly forwards, and he has a tendency to finish with a stronger side. The term finishers actually has a bit more meaning this time around with that South Africa team. He plays on an upward curve. That South Africa team were always going to finish strongly.
You're exactly on the money. The other part was the South Africans firstly stop you playing. That's something that's been forgotten in the analysis of the South African side. Their number one objective is to stop you playing, and then they'll start playing. So against Wales, they pretty much kept Wales out of that game up until the last 10 minutes. And we've seen them do it all season. They certainly stopped Australia and to an extent, New Zealand during the Southern Championship. And they were a team that could disrupt England because England relies so much on their physicality, and you're not going to be more physical than that South African side. So they did have the game that England didn't want. What none of us picked was South Africa scoring two tries down the flanks because we thought that's what England might do to South Africa, because South Africa condense their defence. Their defence is very narrow, and they come up hard and they give you space on the edges. But what South Africa then did to England was to use those last few centimetres of ground in the last 20 minutes when fatigue had set in, and really had done a magnificent job. And again, what we also didn't pick was the England scrum to be so dominated by the South Africans.
How much of that do you put down to Sinclair's substitution earlier on, or is it just a cumulative effect of both the tournament and, I guess, the pressure that was being exerted by the Springboks?
So it's a really tough one to answer. Obviously, Sinclair's he's a British and Irish lion, and he played quite magnificently the week before. So you've got to say that had a significant role. But Cole's come off the bench, and there's been no problems with the scrum. Mm. Very interesting. It was put to me by a former Wallaby tight head that putting Cruz back to the bench left them without a specialist tight head second rower. Now, without getting too technical, but being a second rower on the left or the right-hand side is a very big difference to both those second rowers. And bringing Laws in, who was very athletic, and putting Cruz back on the bench had a problem. Now, when Cruz came on, you might notice that's when the English scrum, still with the same tight head prop, did tighten up and actually got a couple of penalties off South Africa. So I guess on that viewing and that evidence that we saw, that could be put down to part of it. Now, again, tight head props tend to overthink these things. That's part of what they do. But I have to say that when it was explained to me, and it wasn't my theory, I went back and had a look, and I got to say it has a fair bit of validity.
Yeah, it's the kind of dynamics that, you know, the layperson would, I guess, miss, and I count myself among those, that the relationships that go on, the fact that a lock is not just a lock, that there is a difference between four and five, that these little tiny little things, if one of those little tweaks is made, and especially one that you're not anticipating, it can make all the difference in the world.
That's huge. And well, it's just imagine, you know, if you're sitting at home at one side of the scrum, your right arm's up and your left hand's across, and the other side is exact mirror opposite. So the second rowers tend to specialise in being a loose head second rower or a tight head second rower. And, you know, the tight head is very, very important, because sometimes we're seeing the loose head and the hooker will go together, and the tight head's quite often left on his own to an extent. And so he really needs his flanker and his second rower on him to provide that power. Now, in those early scrums, where we saw Cole get into a lot of trouble, then when Cruz came on, Cole went up on that side. Now, Vunipola had come off, there's a new loose head on and all that. There was a few other dynamics in there. But again, it's a theory that is probably holds a bit of water.
Yeah, absolutely. On the element of the South African victory, just as a whole, we're going to get this. We're going to get the view of Cobus Fiza in a little bit. He's going to come on the line and join us. But what this says about the journey that South African rugby has come on under Razzy Erasmus over the course of the last 2 years, especially, is huge. They were a side that were beaten out the gate by the All Blacks. They were kind of almost embarrassed and looked at a real shadow of themselves the last time they visited Dublin. We're now in a situation whereby a Lions team visiting South Africa has never visited anything but world champions. The last three times now it will be visiting world champions. They tends to come right at the right moments. And the work Erasmus has done, especially over the last 2 years, has got to be huge.
South Africa is such a complex beast. You know, it'd be really interesting to hear what Cobus is, obviously a World Cup winner himself. But what Rassie's done, not just technically, tactically on the field, he's united that team off the field. You know, the selection of Khaleesi as captain is hugely symbolic in Africa to have a black captain of the Springbok. It's an amazing choice by Rassie, and obviously that has united the team, because you have to, if you're a South African coach, you have to tread the line as well of politics, because there's usually an ANC appointee on the staff. I know for a fact from coaches in the past have told me that when you make a change, a black player comes off and you don't put a black player on, you are asked your reasons why. So we're players, like as a coach, we don't see players' colour, I don't see their sexuality, their politics, just see if they're playing well or not. But in South Africa, a lot of that is seen, even when it's not meant to be seen. So Rassie has done more than just unify that side. He's walked the line of the politics that has to come with every national team in South Africa, be it cricket or rugby, that were the symbolisms of the old or the symbols of the old regime. And he's unified that. And that is not easy to do. Jake White did it to a degree. 95 was probably not as relevant then, because it was Nelson Mandela had just got into power. So it was more Nelson Mandela offering a gesture of unity to the rest of white South Africa in his wearing of the Springbok jersey and presenting the trophy to Francois Pienaar. But in recent years, it has become a real issue. And Rassie's absolute brilliance at the culture of creating a culture that is accepting within that team, and that the people of South Africa have really bought into. Like the shots of the people watching the game in Johannesburg, with all different races wearing a Springbok jersey, would not have happened, you know, 10 years, maybe even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it really showed the power of what Rassie's done, and Khaleesi's symbolism of him as captain of the national team. It's actually a wonderful story. I heard Francois Pienaar come out, I think it was on Sunday, and just say that win was even more symbolic than his victory in 1995 and Nelson Mandela handing him the William Webb Ellis Trophy. He said that victory by that South African team and what it represents was even more important to the country than his team's win. So that's seriously some statement coming from a wonderful man like Francois Pienaar.
Matt, it seems an opportune moment to bring in Cobus Visa here on the line. Cobus is a member of that 1995 winning squad. We mentioned there, Cobus, and you're very welcome to the show, that at the time it seemed like Nelson Mandela wearing that Springbok jersey at the trophy presentation seemed a gesture. The team that won on Saturday seems to be the child of that gesture. I don't know if that's too grand a statement to make.
Yeah, I think every World Cup first should be judged. And good evening, gentlemen. As I said to you guys, should be judged on its own. It's on merit. It's a different group of players, different circumstances. But if you go back to 95, yes, we just come back from isolation, probably 2 years before. And nobody would have given us a chance for logical reasons, you know, being out of the international scene, training methods, all these kind of things, techniques were falling behind because we weren't able to participate with the rest of the major countries in the world. So there wasn't much hope given, but our country was in turmoil political wise and so forth. So the great game of rugby just sort of opened huge doors, and Nelson Mandela had no reason to offer a gesture, but I think wise men like he was saw opportunity, you know, and saw there's no point in keep on fighting. But, you know, if we want to live together, this country wants to grow and fulfill its potential, then all people in this country, South Africa, should work together. And he used this very wisely, sport and the opportunity as a vehicle. And we probably didn't understand it at that stage, but, you know, as the World Cup progressed in South Africa, we saw people just, you know, getting caught up in this wave and support the team from all walks of life, which made us, obviously, a lot of pressure on us as a team, but, I mean, it made it so much more special. And as you said in the final, you know, when he wore the Springbok jersey, was a wonderful gesture. It was a brilliant gesture. It was a gesture of reconciliation and a gesture of a hand to all South Africans to take hands and join and support the national team, which wasn't like that before.
How has this victory been received across all communities? It's been one, I'd hope that it's been welcomed in pretty much all corners back in South Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is similarities between this one. You know, it's the first black captain. I think there's a, and for the first time, people, not the first time, but there was definitely a huge wave of hope. You know, our country, economically wise, is not going well. There's a lot of turmoil on governmental level and so forth. And this country's got so much incredible potential. And what should have been something that is a positive effect since 95 that Nelson Mandela started, you know, sadly fell by the wayside by certain politicians, which he said. And now there's an opportunity again, and hopefully, you know, the politicians in this country can use this to ride this wave as a positive wave, to use it for change. Again, sport has opened the door for people to take hands and walk towards one common goal, because the people of this country want, the majority of the people of this country really want this to work, there's no doubt.
Speaking of work, it seems to be a lot of effort put into obviously getting this team to being world champions. It strikes me as that Razi Erasmus has found a way to get this side victorious, but what may come afterwards might actually be more dominant, and there might be even more success to come throughout the years. I mean, you take the journey that he's brought certain players on, like Makazole Mapimpi, who he mentions after Saturday's game, says he couldn't catch a ball when he first arrived with the Springboks in June 2018. Fast forward to 13, 14 months down the line, he's scoring a crucial try in a World Cup final. He's catching balls to beat the band. The transformative power that Razi Erasmus has had over this squad has been quite something.
Yes, he has. He's done very well. I think one thing he's done, he's gone back to basics, you know, build team spirit, a belief in each other, a belief in a common goal. One thing South Africans have always had on rugby field, and that's a fighting spirit. There's no doubt about that. When the chips are down, we've always stood up. And it's a, you know, it's a proud nation when it comes to the great game of rugby, like the Irish and like New Zealand and Australia and England and so forth. So we take it serious, as you guys, and it's a very important game to us, because it has shown in the past that it unites people. But again, opportunity was given to young players coming through, young talented players. They use that opportunity, like a Mapimpi, for instance, like a Bongi and Manambi, like a Malcolm Marks, and so I can carry on a Chase and Colby. All these guys have used the opportunities in the great game of rugby to the benefit of the team, and hopefully this can carry on, because the sort of foundation has been laid, and Rusty is not the coach anymore after this, but he's staying on as director of rugby, and hopefully this thing will carry on, because talent, we have talent in abundance. There's so much young talent running around that is waiting to be explored.
Matty, I'll bring you back in here, because as I mentioned there, this World Cup victory almost seems like it could be the springboard to further successes down the line if this is managed right.
Well, it's a very young Springbok side too. I think there was something that was pointed out to me yesterday when I started going through the ages of the guys. There's certainly almost the entire team will be there for the Lions and even for the next World Cup. And I think what Rassie could do when he steps into the director of rugby role is have a really strong influence on the super franchises and the Currie Cup, because obviously that is South Africa's depth and strength. You know, I'm old enough to have been at the Waratahs when Cobus was at Transvaal many last century. Unfortunately, Cobus, we have to say, but you know that I think Rassie's influence, if he gets down to the super teams and the Curry Cup teams, and you know the young boys turning up to Craven Week and where we can start to see this conveyor belt that New Zealand has got going, South Africa equally should have that. Because their structures are so good and the game is so entrenched in the culture of the people. And I think that's an area that Rassie will also have a strong influence on. But he also says he's not going away from the national team. He's going to have a coach, but he's going to be not behind a desk, to quote him. So I think it's a really positive thing for South Africa, the win, but also the fact that Rassie isn't just going to coach. I think that could be a major positive in South Africa's hand.
Cobus, that conveyor belt nature is something that will put the frighteners on a lot of Northern Hemisphere teams, I think.
Yeah, I agree with this being said. You know, I think one of the major differences, I believe, between, for instance, New Zealand and us and Super Rugby has been that although each franchise and each coach and each team of for instance, the Crusaders or the Highlanders or the Chiefs, of course they want to win the competition and they all play to win it, but there's one common goal, one silver lining and runs through. Eventually and ultimately, it's about the All Blacks. So they all get aligned, as we just heard, and I agree 100%. And that, in my opinion, is the success ratio. And I think, hopefully, Rassie will try and get that right and Saru will try and get that right, because we have the conveyor belt, as you said. We've got plenty of talent. There is so much players coming through. You mentioned Mampimpi, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years at the most, he was playing varsity cup rugby for a university side in the B division. Now he's played at a World Cup and he came one short of scoring the most tries in a World Cup. So it shows you the talent is there. They need to be given the opportunity. The systems must be in place to bring through all that talent.
Speaking of talents, and we should mention that our rugby coverage is brought to you with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Maddie, we learned today that Damien Dialende is probably going to pitch up at Munster over the course of 2020. We're possibly going to see Orji Snyman in there as well. What kind of an arrival would Dialende be to Munster? What could he add to that side?
Well, you know, he's a very powerful runner, very good defender, tough guy. You know, that centre combination, if he comes in with Farrell, that's a very, very big couple of centres you got there. And if Snyman turns up as well, I mean, I think he's the tallest guy in world rugby. He was 2.7 metres. I think he stands. I mean, he's an absolute giant. He was in the looking down on Sam Whitelock when they played New Zealand. You know, who's taller than Sam Whitelock and looks down on them? They're both quality players. And I would also say they're not players coming to the end of their career. They're players that are in their prime. And I think they'll have a very, very strong influence for the positive into Munster.
Cobus, the Dialende arrival might be the one that kind of is the most eye-catching, but what Snyman can offer to a pack and to a second row in particular is going to be mouth-watering in terms of what he might bring to Munster over the course of the next 2 years or so. I think we've lost Cobus there. But yeah, as you mentioned, Snyman, and we had a picture of him from there, Matty. Scary-looking character and an opposing-looking character. And as you mentioned, somebody who can cause a lot of hassle at the breakdown.
Yeah, massive guy. And look, Richie, you know, it's really, really amazing all the way the game's changed, the way it's grown, professionalism, whatever it is that the game has developed from to what it is now. If you don't have your set plays or set and organised and functional, you don't win games. You don't win a World Cup final. England can place their defeat in that World Cup final to their scrum, line out and restart. You've got to have that right. Now, Munster traditionally have always had a great pack of forwards. It's been their go forward and their backs. But you can't, you put a guy who's 2.7 metres into a line out or a scrum, and there's going to be a lot of power and a lot of jumping power and horizontal thrust from a guy like that. You then put Dialende into the centres, you know, and that's going to make a big, big difference, because if they play him as a target, in other words, they just get him, you get across the game line, let's get around the corner, and you can play some pretty direct gain line rugby. And again, what did England not do? They just could not get the gain line because South Africa denied them ball, but also denied them in their defence. So again, the World Cup final, for all our advances, came down to England couldn't win enough primary possession. They couldn't get a gain line, and then they couldn't stop their opposition doing the opposite. So it's still a pretty basic game when you look at it in those terms, and that's why those two players arriving at Munster are really, really good signings.
Yeah, and the timing of it is absolutely immense to see South Africa coming off the back of a World Cup victory, and two of their squad are going to be pitching up at Thomond Park in less than a year's time. It's going to be brilliant stuff to see. And Matty, thanks so much for your input over the course of the World Cup as well. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, mate. Good to talk to you.
Cheers, boss. There you go. It's Matty Williams on the Rugby World Cup final. And congratulations as well to South Africa. And thanks to Cobus Vesey as well for taking the call from South Africa tonight too. Loads to come still on the show. Pat Nevin on the weekend's football. Reaction from both camps after yesterday's FAI Cup final at the Aviva Stadium. And up next, Andy's back in studio along with Ronan. We're looking back at Katie Taylor becoming a 2-8 world champion.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.